Muddy Knees Media.
Welcome to the Offside Rule. It's me, Kate Borsay, galloping into your ears with our latest show. That'll make sense in a minute, by the way. Joining me today, they're under starters' orders. First up, it's our filly of the show. It's Premier League reporter Vishali Budwaj. Welcome on many other, of course, stations and broadcasters that you work for, TalkSport, and on it goes. But I think we can officially say that you are an aficionado across Premier League and several other things going on in football right now. Therefore, by default, if we're to continue with this Cheltenham-based theme...
Am I a fine filly?
You're the mayor.
Great.
No more of that now. Cheltenham is going on.
You better
on.
Say who I am, just
it's
in case.
It's Lindsay Hooper.
There we go.
Yes, it's Cheltenham week. And whilst we might be making football shows, that doesn't mean that we can't enjoy some horsing around, does it, ladies?
I'm not a big fan of horse racing, I have to say, which is probably
kills
something I shouldn't have said just right now.
Well, that's okay.
I am.
Lindsay likes the fillies. Listen, we're going to be naming all of our topics after Cheltenham-related, horse-related things. But I do just want to, first of all, talk about coronavirus because everyone's talking about it. And I think it's important because it's a big developing story in sport as well at the moment.
Yeah, we can narrow it down even as far as football for this podcast and the effects that it can potentially have. I know that we've had interesting weeks, haven't we, at work?
So just to say that we're recording this on Thursday afternoon, so a lot may change when this comes out by Friday morning. I'm sure our listeners will appreciate that. But Vishali, what have you had to come up against this week?
Well, I was at Arsenal's training ground, and I've been at Arsenal at the Emirates Stadium or the training ground quite a few times since the Olympiacos game.
Yes.
And of course, on Wednesday morning, when the news came out that Arsenal's game against City had been postponed.
Yes.
I woke up and I was like, hang on, I was like, training ground a couple of days
this before.
This
is because
that.
The owner or the chairman of Olympiacos
has got coronavirus.
Also the owner of Nottingham Forest as well.
Yeah. So we're still just waiting to see whether or not the games will go ahead this weekend, whether or not they'll be behind closed doors. But
so
for
you've
now.
You've sort of had to keep your distance a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. And for now, it's just business as usual, though. So we're trying to still focus on you know, the press conferences tomorrow, but it's hard because you don't quite know what could happen.
And business as usual, apart from we have had our first postponed fixture. That was Manchester City against Arsenal, which goodness knows when that's going to be crammed into this already busy schedule. And I think any delays are going to cause a knock-on effect, which then brings us to what will potentially happen here. And this is just speculation. None of this is founded on anything as we record. But it's hard to see past the fact that the domestic season is going to be hard to complete. Mm. There's no wriggle room, so there isn't really much catering in for things like this happening. And Champions League, Europa League already being played behind closed doors. The next step is to postpone completely. We've just heard as we're on our way in that the Real Madrid fixture next week isn't going to happen.
So that's with Manchester City. So they're affected again in this scenario. Real Madrid have self-isolated. That's why. So the fixture with Man City is off, as is Juve versus Lyon. UEFA are deciding whether to postpone. At the moment, those games are off. Now, Lindsay, in terms of the Premier League, you have an opinion about whether games will be postponed or just simply played behind closed doors.
I don't think they will go behind closed doors purely for the fact that the fans and what they bring to those stadiums and for those experiences count so much. If you're looking at Liverpool winning a title potentially behind closed doors, there would be fan uproar. We saw it with PSG and how the fans were just outside the stadium
instead. Well,
you're
still going to get gatherings of fans anyway, aren't you? I have to say, if you're using Italy as the example, of course, their games are going on behind closed doors. I don't see how the games can be postponed because where are they going to be postponed to unless the Euros is called off?
Well, that's what I think will happen. I think the Euros potentially will move to next summer alongside the Women's Euros, and that could be an interesting thing
anyway.
Yeah, it could be,
particularly as they're a home Euros.
Yeah,
and
they don't need
England.
To clash. There are stadiums being used by the women's teams that wouldn't be used in the men's. I suppose there is a debate over Wembley in the finals, but apart from that, you could get them going concurrently, and then you just extend the season so that the Premier League domestic fixtures can be completed with full stadiums, and that goes the same for the Champions League and Europa League matches, because the further you go down in this knockout contest, the more that the home fans can really have an effect. I mean, if you're talking Premier League, Wolves are playing West Ham this weekend, and I was hearing on the radio coming in now that West Ham fans believe that the home factor would have such a big part as to whether they could get something out of that match. So you take away the fans and suddenly the dynamic changes.
Well, can you imagine a Champions League final without fans?
Well,
it'd be crazy to even think how the players could actually get themselves mentally ready for a game of that magnitude.
Yeah. Well, we've already seen
fans there.
Already seen games without fans there. PSG on Wednesday evening, and of course in Serie A, Cristiano Ronaldo's been high-fiving imaginary people.
We'll see a lot more of that.
Yeah. Well, the team bus arrived for the game against Inter Milan. Juve arrived, Ronaldo stepped off the bus and was high-fiving imaginary people. He even clapped the imaginary crowd in the stadium.
He's staying in Portugal now, by the way. He's announced that. He's not going back to Juve at the moment. And then the other bit of news that we haven't discussed is that Leicester have revealed that they've got three players that are being monitored,
because
that have been showing
symptoms of COVID-19. Yeah. Chelsea training today, that's Thursday, wasn't held. It's expected to be held tomorrow, but someone close to the squad, is the line, has presented with symptoms. No conclusion as to testing yet. So La Liga, the Eredivisie, Liga NOS and the MLS are suspended. L'Equipe reporting that UEFA will make a vote. So they're set to vote on Tuesday on whether what the situation is with Euro 2020, basically, whether it will be postponed to 2021. The Wales versus USA internationals postponed.
Denmark
expects the England match to follow suit as well. What I didn't know is that Vishali is well ahead of the curve when it comes to self-sanitising and to cleaning yourself down,
which is true,
against harmful germs.
Yeah, and I've got an empty Carex complete packet in front of me as I explain this
story. We are
looking
for sponsorship at the moment, Carex, if you're listening.
I do love these little wipes. So basically, I come from a family who are clean freaks. I mean, we've got Dettol spray in our house. We all sanitise.
She's bought a Dettol spray in with her today.
Oh, I bought it for my home because my local stores are all...
No, right, you just bought it in. You basically take it everywhere with you, don't you?
Yeah, basically.
As I came out the tube just, there's a chancer at the top of the escalators saying two lots of bacterial thing for £10.
£10, can
really?
You imagine?
Oh, my God. Really? And what I didn't know is that, Vishali, also you sanitise your phone.
My phone and my MP3 player as soon as I get home.
This is a daily thing, regardless of coronavirus.
Yeah, and also the bottom of my bag when it's on the floor on the tube.
That is
be cleaned. As in, because then I put it on my bed. I put it, you know, you don't know where you might put it. And you just think,
all
those germs
all
on your bed? No way. So yeah, that gets cleaned as soon as I get home.
Vishali will outlive us all.
How about the bottom of your shoes?
I do spray my shoes with Dettol spray.
Oh my God, this is amazing information.
But not really the bottom. I wipe it really well on the rug.
Do you take off your shoes as soon as you get into the house?
Yeah. So I don't really walk around my house with my shoes on.
Really? Any other measures? What about if your hair touches something?
I just wash it again.
Okay. I'm laughing, but you know what?
She's going to be around, a lot longer than us.
But now everyone understands why I do it. But in the past, people have not understood one bit why I used to clean my desk down, spray everywhere. They just thought
militant
I was a weirdo.
About hygiene. Producer Ben here at the Totally Football Network is also very into hygiene as well, and says he's having the time of his life because at last people are reveling in hand sanitizer, hand gel, alcohol wipes. He's saying,
they're washing their hands finally.
It is the new normal for us, but producer Ben and Vishali have been doing this for ages and they're feeling like everyone's joining their club. Is it going to reach the stage of Naomi Campbell for you there, Vishali?
No, I won't be boarding a plane with a
full hazmat on.
Yeah, no, I won't be. No, that's not going to happen. I haven't bought any sort of face mask yet either.
Well, they don't really work,
no,
to be honest.
So, yeah.
Only 2 days ago, I still saw a car pulled up in the hard shoulder, man outside having a wee.
Aww.
See, those are the people spreading it.
Okay, but was he just having a wee into the ground? I mean, he wasn't spraying.
But we
people.
Can't just pull over, can we, and drop our kegs? We can't do it. So, if anything good can come from this,
it's about hygiene, it's about containment, and it's about decency.
Absolutely.
If you're Lindsay Hooper. All right, let's progress with the show. Coming up this week, we're of course going to continue with the horsing around theme. We'll be talking stewards' inquiry and raising our eyebrows at players who've double teamed in Derby. Plus our punters' picks on the celebrities who've got themselves involved in football. But as ever, our reminder that you can catch up with us on Jet Radio every Friday from 4 o'clock. You get our show, but you get music as well. Great if you're out running, by the way, might I suggest. This is The Offside Rule with Kate Borsay, Lindsay Hooper and Vishali Bhardwaj. Let's go front runners then. This is, of course, influenced by the fact that Liverpool are in the position when they could win the title as early as Monday. That's if Manchester City lose to Burnley on Saturday. So let's take a little look at examples in football history where sides have won in record time. By the way, if that happens, if City lose to Burnley, Liverpool would win their 19th title on the 16th of March, so 8 games to spare. Even if it takes Liverpool until the Crystal Palace game on the 21st of March or at City on the 5th of April, this will still be an English record. So it looks likely that Liverpool will set an English record for winning the title the earliest on in a season.
Some added value as well if you're a Liverpool fan, if you potentially could win on Monday in the Merseyside derby if City slip up.
Yeah. But Vishali, give us another example.
So I've picked the Arsenal Invincibles in 2003-2004. And the reason is they won it with 4 games to spare. So it's not a record.
No.
You know, Manchester United won it with 5 games to spare in 2001, which I'll come to later on. But for me, the reason why this was a great story was because they won it at White Hart Lane, so the home of their rivals.
Nice slice of irony.
They didn't win the game. It was a draw. It was a 2-2 draw. They were close to winning the game. I think it was Robbie Keane penalty that denied them the win. But because of results earlier on in the day, they won it. And there's this really famous picture of Arsene Wenger holding his hands up with his back to the Arsenal fans. And there's a banner in the background just above, conveniently placed just above his head, that says Arsene knows or something like that. And it's just like, it's an iconic picture of him at White Hart Lane celebrating a great win. And of course,
we
they went on to
Arsene go and knows best. That's according to producer
Abby. Absolutely.
Still hasn't forgiven Arsene Wenger.
And that was the second time that they'd won it at White Hart Lane, the Premier, well, not the Premier League, but the English top flight title, because they won it in 1971 as well.
Ooh,
so yeah, if you're an Arsenal fan, I'm sure you'll remember that for two reasons, not just one.
Lindsay, what about you?
Rubbing salt into wounds.
Absolutely.
We will go on to Manchester United in a minute, but Lindsay, do you want to chip in with your
Yes,
one?
I'm going to go abroad. I'm going to go to France. And you may recall a few seasons ago, it's 2015-16, when PSG went and broke a record that had been held by Gerard Houllier at Lyon, because in 2007, they won the Liga title with 6 games to play.
The league what title,
the
sorry?
The Liga.
Okay.
The league title.
Yeah.
I'm going to come to you for another French pronunciation
Lindsay's
in a minute.
French, by the way, is an ongoing joke on this podcast, in case you are new to us.
So why do I keep picking French examples? But I do. But anyway, PSG, the reason I did choose this one, so they won the title pretty much to this date. So it was 13th of March 2016, 8 games to spare, and they won in style. So the last game where they clinched the title was against, and I'm going to check my French pronunciation here, Troyes.
Troyes.
It's not a number for Charlie. It's not. I'm not asking for 3. It's Troyes. The team Troyes.
I think it's just Troy, isn't it?
Troy.
Perhaps. Anyway.
Anyway, they
I'm
beat,
no expert.
They
on that
beat
one,
Troy
hands up.
Or Troyes. 9-0.
9-0. I think I remember that game.
I mean, these are sorts of results that are a one-off. How much did we go on about it in the Premier League this year when Southampton were beaten by Leicester 9-0? I mean, it took up column inches and space for weeks and weeks. That's how they did it in style. And Zlatan Ibrahimovic scored 4 goals in the match, included a 9-minute hat-trick. It was also their 4th successive title. So you'd think expectation, they've got that out the way.
Yeah.
Champions League, they're going to go all the way.
Yeah.
No. Manchester City stopped them in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. They couldn't get past English opposition, beaten 3-2 on aggregate.
Hangover time for PSG. I'm going to chip in with interests north of the border. Celtic 2016-17. It could happen again this season, of course, as well. Brendan Rodgers, in charge of the club, led them to a historic treble, capped off by the fact they went the whole season without losing a game in the domestic league and cup competitions. They finished a remarkable 30 points clear of second place Aberdeen. They clinched the title with 8 games left in the season. I think I'm yet to find an example to beat that. So 8 games left.
Well, PSG was 8.
Oh, sorry. I wasn't listening, was I, properly?
No.
It doesn't beat it. It's true.
It matches it.
It's true. It matches it. 2nd of April, they did this on. It was the earliest win, or the earliest conclusion of who'd won the Scottish League Championship in 88 years.
Wow.
Vishali, you mentioned Manchester United,
this is
in terms of the Premier League, until Liverpool come along, this is at the moment the top record.
I think this is the joint top record,
isn't it?
With City. But yeah, in 2001, they won it at Old Trafford. They beat Coventry 4-2. But the interesting and slightly funny thing was obviously that because they didn't actually get awarded the title, as it were, until later on in the day, because they had to wait for, I think, Borough to beat Arsenal.
I remember this.
I think most of the fans had actually left Old Trafford, so the fans weren't even inside, most of them, to celebrate them becoming champions. But I think there was a story where Roy Keane was asked about celebrating, and he said, well, now we're thinking about Champions League. So they didn't really have time to celebrate it, because they had to think about the Champions League after that.
See, when we're chatting to players and you're sitting down and you're asking, you know, how do you want to win the title? Part of me thinks that the answer truly and honestly must be at home in front of your home fans.
I think so. I think it would be.
But they would
it?
Never say that now. It's just like, as soon as possible, we just want to get it done.
Job done.
Yeah.
But if you could
orchestrate
scenario,
it. Yeah, if you could.
Well, I was at the Hawthorns when Chelsea won it against West Brom, when Batshuayi scored that 82nd minute goal. And I remember, like, they obviously would have wanted to have won it at Stamford Bridge, but they didn't care. When they won it, they just had this sense of relief and they went absolutely mental. And they were celebrating, they were drinking all night. You could hear them from the away changing room and they were just having the times of their lives.
If you're so far ahead, though, as Liverpool are you going for a joint record of winning it as early as possible? Or do you think...
You just want to get the job done again.
Yeah, I think with Liverpool, I think that whole sort of talk about the records, I think that was really weighing on their minds. I think now that record obviously has gone because they lost to Watford, the invincible record obviously matching it, I think they just want to win it now. Particularly given that they've been losing of late.
Mm. Just a nod to the championship here. Reading in 2005-2006, they won the title on the 25th of March. They then went on to achieve a record points haul of 106 points in Tier 2. So that was the earliest that we can find.
I remember that season because Kevin Doyle was in sensational form. We bought him to Wolves and then he didn't. He was quite good for us, but not as good as he ever was at Reading.
Well, we'll have to wait and see when and if Liverpool will get their hands on. Of course they're going to do it. There's no if. But anyway, exactly. Unless, as producer Abby's pointed out, coronavirus puts pay, which would just be, I mean, as a Liverpool fan, how long do you want to drag this out, folks? For nothing else than our nerves.
Oh, come on. Like, the worst that could possibly happen is that they just say, right here, right now,
we're
let's just stop it.
Yeah. So that's
you've won.
Not going to happen.
It's more going to affect the relegation places.
True. So anyway, we'll have to wait and see when Liverpool win that Premier League trophy. But with a Merseyside derby around the corner, it's time to talk about some players who've donned the shirt for both sides. So lots of derbies going on this weekend. This is Stewards Inquiry, by the way, because does something need to be investigated? Is this behaviour out of order or not? There are several examples, aren't there, of players who've played for both rival sides. Just of note, by the way, we've got a West London derby in the Championship this weekend. That's Brentford versus Fulham. And I don't know if this is a Birmingham derby or quite how you class it. West Brom versus Birmingham. You're the expert here because it's not a Black Country derby.
No. Oh, no, it's not.
No. So
Birmingham
how would you
is
class
not
it?
In the Black Country.
No. So you just class
my
it a derby. Well, no. So you
West Midlands derby.
Okay. And the biggest derby of all on Sunday, Rangers versus Celtic. That's still on at the moment. We've got the Merseyside derby on Monday. So what about players that have played for both rival teams? Who are some of the people who've been at risk? Risky enough, brave enough to wear the shirt of both sides and upset fans thoroughly. And can we ever forgive them? For Charlie?
So I've gone for Sol Campbell, quite a famous example.
Yes.
Obviously spent 9 years at Spurs. And the story of how he joined Arsenal was quite an interesting one, because obviously I think Spurs had offered him a massive contract to stay on at the club. I believe it was, I think it would have made him the highest paid player at the club if he had signed it.
The most famous thing about that Sol Campbell story is, of course, that we knew that Arsene Wenger was going to be unveiling a big signing, but no one knew who it was.
Yeah, journalists thought it was someone completely different. Yes. And I think Sol Campbell had actually said the season before he left Spurs that he would never play for Arsenal. I'm sure there's a quote out there where he actually said it. And then, of course, he is unveiled as an Arsenal
drama
player.
As he was unveiled, and there was a collective intake
shock
of horror in that press conference room.
And, of course, Spurs fans, you know, they labelled him Judas. I think that's something that, you know, he's probably heard a lot of times since then. But, you know, it was a good time for him at Arsenal. I think he won 2 Premier League titles. He was part of the Invincible side as well. So he obviously went to win the Premier League title and he got to achieve that. So I suppose if you're a fan, you know, it's hard if you're a player. You've got to think about your career, what you want to win and the opportunities that are there. And of course, for him, he probably thought, well, I can stay in London as well. But it's tough, isn't it, to join your arch rivals? I mean, you know, have the fans say all sorts of things about
you. Brave.
But you just have
it's
to
brave
take
indeed.
It, don't you?
Yeah, and I'm sure that he wouldn't have regretted his decision afterwards either.
I'm sure people listening have got their own ones, and we'd love to continue this conversation and hear from you on our social accounts, so at Offside Rule Pod on Twitter if you've got any. I was trying to think of the rivalry that's perhaps one of the worst in the world. What could be the ultimate bad move? It has to be in Scotland, doesn't it? Doesn't it have to be between Celtic and Rangers? So Scotland striker Kenny Miller did this. He played for Rangers. He left them to come and play for Wolves in 2001. And then after his stint with us, as people know that I'm a Wolves fan, went back to Scotland to Celtic in 2006.
So he had a club break.
He had a club break in between. He didn't go straight from one to the other, but still to go from Rangers to Celtic. And he was only there one season at Celtic, but he did help them win the title. He also helped them win the Scottish League Cup. So he will go down in their history. Mm. And you can't think that many players have been on both sides of that divide.
What about a player who went from Manchester City to Manchester United and then back to Manchester City? Dennis Law is who I'm talking about. This is a really famous example. But I wanted to bring your attention to this happening way, way back in the early days. A player called Wilf Woodcock played for Manchester United from 1912 to 1920. The First World War interrupted that, but he then went on to sign for Manchester City from 1920 to 1922. And in those days, Manchester City, for the most part of that, was the bigger club. Do you know why I mentioned this?
Because you're related.
He's my great-great uncle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So this is my only claim to football fame.
What a great story.
So let's roll it out for this one. So, born in Drawlston. So he came from Greater Manchester, and a lot of my family are still based up in Manchester, actually. And there is apparently a pair of football boots knocking around somewhere, and there's a trophy also that my uncle has. There's also a story about him throwing some of his memorabilia into the Mersey.
Oh,
but I don't know too much about him because a lot of information on his club career is held at Manchester United, where he spent most of his career, and there was a big fire there, which put pay to most of this. But there is a
few. Why did he throw this memorabilia into the Mersey?
I don't know. I've honestly no idea.
Because speaking of throwing things, I wonder if it was related to Derby-like things. You know that Luis Figo, because he played for Barcelona and then joined Real Madrid.
Yeah,
and had the pig.
Famously had the pig's head
thrown at him.
The question I always had about that incident was, how did someone get a pig's head
past
the steward?
Don't ask.
Plastic, I mean, how do you do that?
A big coat.
Plastic bag and a coat, yes.
Didn't
a pregnancy.
Smell it?
A fake pregnancy.
Beer belly, more like.
The dead pig's head hidden away.
So, yeah, that's my little tribute to great-great-uncle Wilf. Played for United and then on to Manchester City. Oh. He was a forward. He also played for England as well. But he is literally my only attachment to football glory.
It's a pretty good attachment, though,
yeah,
I have to say.
Yeah. At the same time as him, there is quite a well-known Manchester United manager, if you're a big fan of the club, called Ernest Magnall. He, at the same time, managed United and then went on to manage Manchester City. His win rate makes him the third most successful Manchester United manager of all time. And he sort of goes down in folklore in Manchester because it's thought that it was him who was the instigator behind United's move to Old Trafford. That happened when he was there at the club or just after, and City's move to Main Road.
Brian Clough, that rivalry between Nottingham Forest and Derby, and then to have an actual road, Brian Clough Way, named after you because you've done both. Love these stories.
But
there's so many.
I do feel like it's becoming increasingly common where players now are going to rival clubs, because I think that we've seen it, for example, David Luiz last summer, which shocked Chelsea fans, but they were like, well, you know, I think it's becoming common and fans are beginning to understand it a little bit more.
when it comes Olivier to money. The other way.
Yeah, when it comes to money and also, you know,
certainly
the clubs
London clubs. It kind of feels like the work of Gallas and Ashley Cole and Sol Campbell cemented it being okay. Between Manchester clubs, I don't think it's still okay.
No.
If I'm honest. We've got to move on though, girls. We're going to go to punters picks. Now, to end the show, we wanted to shed some light on celebrities who've turned their hand, sometimes successfully, sometimes not, to football ownership or having a stake in a football club after it recently emerged that George Clooney was apparently interested in buying Malaga FC. The current owner bought the club for €36 million, but at one point was asking €100 million for the club. Some inflation there. So I'd just like a few of these, fairly briefly, A-listers involved in football or with a stake in a football club or team.
So my pick is a cooking A-lister, Delia Smith,
yes,
who I loved when I was growing up. So I'm quite a keen cook. I'm trying to improve all the time. And I watched her growing up.
Down as more of a Nigella fan.
I like looking at everyone's sort of recipes and, you know, picking and choosing, basically. But I did quite like Delia Smith. And still the sight of her at Norwich City games. Still, I don't know, for me, it's still a... interesting sight because I've associated her so much with cooking that I find it still so interesting to see at a football game. But of course she does. She's the majority shareholder at Norwich.
She is. And I've met her at Norwich and it took all of my being not to do the famous Delia Smith.
But she seems so lovely. And I do love it though when Norwich win or score a goal and she goes absolutely bonkers.
It's great to see.
She was their saviour as well. Well, this is a club that were moments, hours even, from folding. And she came in as a majority shareholder. And where the club's come to now,
absolutely,
from her point of view, not a bad business move, I'd say.
I think so. And they are struggling in the Premier League. They could well go down, but they play great football. They've got a good infrastructure.
She's been there before, though, hasn't she, where the team's been relegated. And, you know, to her credit, she has been an ever constant. Lindsay, who are you going to throw at me?
Robbie Williams. Purely because I was a huge Take That fan back in the day. And his boyhood club were Port Vale. And many people for years at the height of his fame, as I was going to see him in different concerts, Port Vale were going through a bad spell and they were saying, when is Robbie Williams going to rescue us? Well, he eventually did step up. It just took till 2006. So he'd been going some time at the height of his fame before he did. But he did stump up £240,000 worth of shares to make him a majority shareholder at the time. Crazy. That's before the club went into administration in 2012. And he had a restaurant named after him. If you go to Vale Park, there's a Robbie Williams restaurant.
Is there now? There's a famous Wolves. Well, there's probably a couple of Wolves examples, but I'm thinking Robert Plant and Led Zeppelin. He is an honorary vice chairman, is he now, for your club, I think. When I was looking into this, I saw the most excellent piece of television ever where he was basically talking about his attachment to Wolves, and there's this sort of early 1980s TV clip with some really bad puns from the TV reporter and Robert Plant telling us about his attachment to Wolves.
He's got a whole lot of love for the boys in gold.
If I wasn't a Wolves fan, I'd probably support three kids and five grandchildren and a lot of happy women.
Elton John and Watford, another famous example. LeBron James as well became a part owner at Liverpool back in 2011. He got a 2% stake in the club when his marketing firm agreed a joint venture with Fenway Sports. According to Bloomberg now, his $6.5 million stake now worth around $32 million.
Loads and loads as well of NBA stars are investing in MLS clubs because it seemed to be that soccer's on the rise there and it's a good way to invest money.
Also, Salma Hayek's husband, I believe, owns Rennes, or definitely did own Rennes in France. I don't know if he still owns it, but that was quite an interesting sight, seeing her at games. In the Ligue 1 games. So that was quite an interesting one there.
That one wouldn't be a bad spot, would it, from the crowd?
I'm sure people were always there.
I'm not sure how famous he is, though, being Salma Hayek's husband.
I've called him Salma Hayek's husband. I don't actually know his name, so it probably says...
It's okay. You know, George Clooney's wife is often in the papers.
Apparently he's called François-Henri Pinault, producer of Abby Season, and he still has an ownership stake in the club. Okay, let's move on to any other business. Well, with coronavirus taking up the news cycle, as we record this, so Thursday, Boris Johnson's just said this, we're considering the question of banning major public events, including sporting fixtures. So at the moment, they've not really moved on from that. If they're considering it, then that's not a huge development. But with COVID-19 dominating all of the sporting headlines this week, it's possible that you might have missed a few smaller but still worth a mention stories. Lindsay, have you got something to bring to the table this week?
Yes, because you can end on a positive.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, I would love to think that this is the most uplifting story. I would love to see it in the Premier League, in the EFL, maybe a couple of weekends or fixture weeks per season. This would be a great thing to do. In Chile, did you see that there was a club called Colo Colo?
I did.
And they had mascots. They led dogs out yes. onto the pitch that Aww. Were up for adoption. So you could see the dogs and then hopefully they would get a new home afterwards.
Yeah. Oh,
my heart melted. This is a club in Chile that have done this, but let's bring it to England.
Yes. Talking of England, just a quick word on the Lionesses, England women. Their defence of the She Believes Cup in the US has ended in defeat. That's 7-11 for Phil Neville. He has said he understands if people question his position, but not great going at the moment for the Lionesses. US soccer, I'm just going to continue on a women's theme for a bit because this storyline is just so incredible in this day and age that I can't not mention it on this show. Basically, US soccer has just said that male players are more skilled than the women players. The sport's governing body is arguing, in their defence of not giving equal pay to the women, they're arguing that women's soccer players don't deserve equal pay because being a male footballer, I quote, requires a higher level of skill.
This is the one country where women's soccer
is bigger
than men's.
It brings in more revenue.
And they're more successful.
Let's just throw that in. They are World Cup winners.
Exactly. It's mind-boggling. I think that's absolutely mind-boggling.
I think it's called clutching at straws. I would be astounded if they did not win this case.
It's just that a national federation, a national body comes out and says that in this day and age is, it's just heads blown for me. But Charlie, anything you've
heads
spotted?
Blown or heads gone?
Heads, well, either. Either, I suppose. Heads gone and heads blown. All of it. All over the wall. Mind's blown. Head's blown.
That's
head's
what
gone.
I mean. This is just Kate's actually worse than me. You mean, there's mind's blown and head's gone.
If I want to amalgamate the two, I can. I feel that US soccer's outrageous quotes, their outrageous defence is worth everything. One more to finish on. I'm going to come back to coronavirus. Diego Costa. We watched this before the show,
didn't we?
I mean, come on it. So he was at the game on Wednesday night in the Merseyside crowd as Atletico Madrid, as we know, dramatic extra time win over Liverpool to dump them out of the Champions League. What did Diego Costa do afterwards? He pretended to cough on journalists as he left Anfield. It just
but
not funny.
I'm not surprised. So I mentioned that win for Chelsea, the Premier League title win at the Hawthorns, and the things that Diego Costa was doing, I have to say, which I'm not going to repeat because I saw them firsthand.
Go on, Vishali.
I mean, there was a moment with a fire extinguisher. So we were trying to conduct the post-match press conference with Antonio Conte, who'd been stolen by Costa, Luiz and John Terry, and we had to finish it off in this random little room that we had found. And he picked up a fire extinguisher and threatened to spray it all on us because he wanted us to finish it off quickly and they wanted to go home and keep on celebrating. But it was actually a really hilarious sight, but it just showed just how...
It just shows his level.
He's just a big joker. So I'm not surprised he did that.
Joker, I would debate whether coughing is funny or not. But, okay. All right, ladies. That is it for today's show. We're going to draw things to a close. Remember, you can get in touch with us at Offside Rule Pod. That's on Twitter and on Insta. And please do leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. In fact, we have a few reviews to read out, actually. Perhaps we'll try and do that next week. If you want to leave us a review, we're going to give you a mention next week. So can you make sure it's nice, please? 5 stars all the way, please. Plus, we have a website, offsiderulepodcast.com, the latest weekend wanderings. We've also got profile there on Jude Bellingham as well. So plenty to come on the website. Do check it out. Lindsay and Vishali, where are you heading next? I always ask this question, Lindsay. Are you on Wolves duty?
No, I'm at Luton for the BBC this weekend. I've filled in my form to say that I haven't been in contact with anyone. So don't breathe on me.
Vishali?
I'm covering Tottenham tomorrow, boarding up to the game against Manchester United.
So Tottenham on Friday. Yeah. All right, well, enjoy your games. Listeners, I hope you've enjoyed the show. And we'll see you again next week.
The Offside Rule is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.
Hello, listeners. I'm Caroline Barker, host of the Totally Football League show. I'm joined each week by Sam Parkin. Say hello, Sam.
Hi, Caroline.
By Adrian Clark. Say hello, Adrian.
Hello.
And a Bolton Wanderers fan too. Not Adrian, but Joe Cridley. Looking forward to League Two?
Yes.
Each week we go headfirst into the EFL to bring you the latest from the pitches to the next crisis to whatever Ian Holloway has said now. From Leeds to Luton, Sunderland to Plymouth, Swindon to Stevenage and everything in between. If it's the EFL you want, we've got you covered. Haven't we, Ollie?
Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down.
Your guess is as good as ours. That's the Totally Football League show, out every Wednesday.
In the most delightful way. It's brilliant. I just love it.
Muddy Knees Media.